it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome back to another episode of the Hockey News on the A podcast. I'm Jacob Stoller, as always, alongside Patrick Williams. This week, we're going to start with part two of our interview with Connor Carrick. We had the first part of it last week, where Connor got into some more general things with respect to how the game is analyzed by media, the kind of discrepancies between the average fan and what the advanced people like himself know and how to bridge that gap. Great conversation on those topics. But for this week, we're going to get into Connor's career right now, what it's like to be in the AHL and sort of the changing landscape of it. And a lot of cool things with respect to what a player like him is evaluating free agency. So I don't want to spoil it all. So, you know, without further ado, let's get part two of the episode going up.
You know, thinking back to, you know, you're discussing Boston and Washington and New Jersey and the NHL in general, like a lot of times those guys have played together for years and years and years, and they know each other, like, you know, the back of their hands. How's that different though in the AHL, where you have guys coming and going on a weekly basis almost?
I mean, it's really tough. The American League schedule entirely. I mean, you're well aware of, you know, the cost of doing business in a 3-3 style. There's a pacing of players. There's a certain, there are certain plays that they won't make. I remember I asked one of our trainers, in Toronto who'd actually worked in football. And I was like, just curious, like, what's the difference between, you know, football and hockey and in some different regards. And he goes, oh, the energy on game day when it came to football, just 'cause there were so few games. And it always kind of clicked. Like, you look around a lot of locker rooms, you know, for games 30 through 70, it's a beat-up group. I mean, if you look around a locker room at game 10, you can't believe that there's 60, 70 more games to go, plus a playoff run. So it's just a different nature to our game, and particularly the American League, you have a lot of change. You have a lot of bodies. I find that to be an issue a lot of times just because you don't have the capped number of players. So, you know, management and coaches are trying to do their best to keep everyone fresh in their game. And that is, you know, part of the definition is a developmental league in nature. So it's a little rougher on the edges that way, but it's beautiful in its own right.
Now, the other challenge in the AHL too, is you get these prospects that come in and they kind of want to be the NHL yesterday. And then you also have a lot of players that have really been kind of kicked around the business and bring some baggage with them and maybe are looking down the road to Europe. How do you pull everyone onto the same page, get everyone to kind of play for a team concept rather than their own careers at this level?
I mean, it's such a team sport. You're going to struggle tremendously with too much individualism. And I think that is where, you know, culture and coaching, you know, really can help. There's always a story to be told, you know, that can motivate individuals and players and appreciation for the moment that you have now. And I think it really just, it always comes down to the individual. Like, do you want to identify as a person who, when things are going really well for you, are you, you know, brave enough, strong enough, enough of a leader to do your best, period. And when things are not going well, like, are you open to trying again and again? And again, and if the answer is yes, I am one of those guys. You look at my hockey TV, there's a lot of different, you know, stops. And I feel way more encouraged, way more spirited right now coming to the rink every day than I have ever in my career before. Some of my darkest days in this game where, you know, I'm not sure my heart was in it to the extent that it is now, where when I was playing often in the NHL, because the culture and coaching was difficult or abrasive, or I, you know, felt, you know, personally, you know, deeply disrespected and in ways that there was adversity that was I wasn't as mature to handle it at the time. I wasn't as seasoned. And as you know, it always circles around to, you ask any player, like, how's it feel when the puck's on your stick? Man, it's a good time. You know, when you're skating well, like, how pure is that? When you're skating well, the game's going on, you feel like you got an extra step. That's encouraging. That's a fun thing to experience. Okay, park that. In order to feel that way, there's some preparation that's got to take place. Let's get after that.
And coaching wise, you have Ryan Mougenal. You've played for a lot of coaches. What is it like to play for him?
He's upbeat. I think he takes into consideration the demands of the American League. There is, without it ever being said, a degree of everyone's here and wishes they were someone else. They were somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so how do you draw people into the present moment and help them feel a bit of joy to be here with the hunger, balance with the hunger to prove themselves? And I think, you know, Ryan Mougenal is a strong ambassador for our game. He is challenging. He has some old school demands and how he plays. And a lot of that filters down from the Boston Bruins as well. And just the culture that they've had and that has been longstanding, you know, up there. He's a good time to play for. And I think he does a really nice job, particularly with younger players where, you know, it's a little tricky for them. They're looking around, maybe other friends, guys that they were drafted ahead of, having a ton of success. And at some point, you've got to fight the fight you're in. And I think he does a good job focusing players that way.
And then just, you know, so you've been through this routine before free agency in the summer, right? You know, we're used to seeing free agency in hockey, and July 1 rolls around and it's the hype with, you know, the big NHL startings. What is it like for rank and file players, which are the vast majority of the league, to go through that? And what made Boston a good fit for you?
You know, Boston expressed an interest, and I love the way that they played. I had familiarity. Oddly, Ryan Mougenal was the assistant coach with the Hershey Bears 10 years ago as a rookie when I came in. And so I knew the personality and I knew what he valued, and that might be a fit. So, you know, my goal was obviously to make Boston. But I you always account for what the underside of, you know, what's the floor of the situation look like if I am in the minors. And then Jim Montgomery, I thought, did a really nice job in Dallas, and I'd played some good hockey for him. I was playing, you know, I had a big injury there, but the night I got hurt, I played 22 minutes. The word every depth player is looking for is leash and trust, right? Like, so I was approaching that with him at a previous time, and I thought he was a great mind for the game and what he wanted from his team. So I thought that was a good fit. And actually, the D coach was John Gruden, who was my coach at the U.S. development team. And John, whom I knew, another great ambassador for the game, I think, challenging while being a genuinely good person and treats you as one. And I think alongside a stellar roster, you know, that the Don Sweeney and the team has had, I think they have a great staff. And so that was really a key point for me. And, you know, there were some other options, but I was really excited at what they had in Boston.
Just further to that, when you're evaluating the landscape of teams and whatnot, you mentioned like how they played, but on the other side of the coin, in terms of like a city living there and whatnot, what kind of things, you know, do you discuss with your family, your partner, whoever it may be, that people may not really think come into play?
I mean, you want it to be family friendly. You want to have, you know, restaurants you can go to. You want it to be, you know, somewhat drivable. We enjoy an urban environment. We live kind of out in the woods in the summer, so it's kind of a nice contrast. Ideally, you want the NHL club to be close. If you are in a call-up situation, that's what every depth guy wants, is to get called up, and that produces tremendous stress on the family. I was in Charlotte last year because Seattle didn't have Coachella Valley up and running. That could have been a tough year if you're doing cross-country flights all season long. You know, my son was a year younger at that point. He turns 2 at the end of the month. That's a handful. And so you do evaluate those things. And it's a fluid situation. That the biggest trouble you run into as you, I'm on a 1-year deal, is, you know, some of the schooling situations. and how you organize preschool and how do you get your kid in swimming class? Cause these are really important things. And they're actually things I've struggled with. They aren't things I've been able to organize and pull off, particularly even this year. Teams will generally help the best they can, but it's the same across the board. Like the NHL is going to get the most amount of available help that they can. They have people for these positions. They have, stronger ties and pull within the community. The American League, it's an implied, you'll figure it out on your own sort of deal.
You know, and you mentioned Charlotte. Last year you played there in a dual affiliation, very kind of a unique setup. As somebody that likes to evaluate different teams, different systems, what did you learn playing there as a Seattle contracted player, playing alongside Florida players?
I thought it was done the only way it could be, and that was as if it was his own entity, which was, I thought, really remarkable. I thought Jordy Kinnear held guys extremely accountable. He was pretty clear in how he wanted to play. He was consistent in his message. He was demanding in practice. He rewarded guys that played well. He kept, accountable guys that didn't. And it was really regardless of affiliation. You had Dan Bylsma, who I think was, very refreshed. It's no secret. I think he's a big part of why Coachella Valley is having success. He's a high-end hockey mind. That quality of coach is generally recruited for the National Hockey League. But, he kind of had a kick at the can there and is, quote-unquote, maybe doing some his time to try to get back in that conversation. He was awesome for us. And I think it was the perfect blend of just positionally. There was competition, but not an overcrowding where – conflict was going to come up a ton. And we had a blast. We had a good team. We had a good run at the end. We ran into a very strong Springfield team. I think it was just a tough matchup for us really all year. But we had a good group. And I mean, with all the transition oftentimes in the American League level, you do lose contact with a lot of your ex-teammates. And I still talk to quite a few of those guys really weekly.
You've been in different career roles. You've been the prospect coming in, breaking through to the NHL full time. Now you're in that late 20s stage that so many players find themselves in. What is that transition in mindset like as a player?
There's a healthy degree of deniability where you want to get back in that conversation and earn a full time position again. There's a grappling with the, finality and being on the back nine. This is my 10th year professional. So, unless I'm going to play 20 years, this is the second half, even if I play 20 years. So I think you, or I at least, particularly appreciate the game. I think I've learned so much about myself through the trials and the tribulations, the successes, the injuries, the trades. My marriage has had so many different tests and opportunities for challenge and growth. You really start to boil down what's important to you and how do I want to go about not just this job, but really any job and any career opportunity that I would have in my life. And I think what's really crazy is I mentioned earlier, I have a son and so far, who knows if it sticks, like he's hockey obsessed. And so now all of a sudden there's this really renewed interest to relearn because it's, who knows if he might lean on me someday and have questions for me. And so it's no longer only a self-serving, thing. He comes on the ice with us, after practice from time to time. There's a hockey gym in the area here that they got a big synthetic ice area. I take him once, twice a week because he loves it and who knows. And so all of a sudden, wow, if I can have this be an avenue to express myself, express my values for sure. That's awesome. Hockey's all, for the most part, all I've ever known, but now I have my son's watching and he's taking note of how dad goes through the world. And I want him to believe it's possible to do something that you really enjoy doing. It's hard. it challenges me. I have some really dark days where I really wish results were different. But who knows? Maybe it's something we share over the coming years, and we'll see what happens next.
If you were going to go back in time and talk to a young Connor Carrick, first, second-year prospect, what would your message to him be?
There's always an opportunity to grow your game. Your relationship with your career is permanent. The people around you will fade away. So, you know, if there's a dominant coach or a dominant voice that's maybe giving you a hard time, there's still an opportunity to work on your game, and you likely won't play for this guy forever, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you will always remember the way in which you carry yourself. And I think that is a very loaded statement.
Absolutely. Well, Connor, thank you so much for joining us. This was awesome, and we really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Connor for coming on. What an amazing speaker, and seriously, one of the true gems in the league in terms of the way he can. I find it very interesting the way that he's able to break down very complicated things, and not just that, but peel back the curtain as to what the mindset and sort of the logistics that someone like him is dealing with. I think that's some really, really awesome insight. And again, thank you so much, Connor. So for now, we're going to get to an interesting topic, another interesting player within the AHL, and that's Alex Galchenyuk. So he's having a very good season with the Colorado Eagles right now. He was in camp with the Avalanche, got injured, I believe, right, Pat? He got injured within preseason?
Preseason, yes.
Got injured in preseason, kept in talking terms, whatever, and they signed him to a deal to be with the AHL. So 24 points in 25 games, and he's trying to get his way back up to the NHL. And Pat, you actually spoke to him and Greg Cronin in Colorado. And it's funny because you and I were talking as you were preparing. And I said, well, why is a guy like him kind of still playing? What's he doing? And what's the kind of the goal here? And you seem to have an interesting understanding of what that may be.
Yeah, I think Alex Galchenyuk is a pretty well-known entity at this point. 11 pro seasons. He was third overall pick by the Montreal Canadiens. He's had a 30-goal season. By any stretch of the imagination, I mean, he's had a career anybody – would be thrilled to have, right?
Totally.
But the last 3 years or so have just – his career definitely went sideways. Played for several clubs. His goal production, his point production definitely fell off considerably. And so this summer, there just weren't many opportunities out there for him. Avalanche come calling. He said that was – extremely appealing to him, a team fresh off a Stanley Cup. In his words, he was fired up to go to camp with them. Obviously, there's, you know, a little bit of a setback with the injury, but, I think to his credit, he was willing to go on a PTO with the Colorado Eagles, play there for a bit. He earned himself an NHL contract for the rest of the year. Actually got himself four games up with the Avs before coming back to the Colorado Eagles. And I think the most interesting part is he is trying to rebrand himself. I think we've all known him for a long time as somebody that could produce offensively, but defensive game was lacking. And he's working very closely with Greg Cronin, the head coach there. It was interesting. So they were on a road trip back in November. So this was the first week that Galchenyuk was with the Eagles. The bus breaks down on the side. So they're on the side of the highway. They have a couple hours to sit there and chat, just to even get to know each other. They just met pretty recently. And Cronin gave him the straight deal. He said, you know, we've done all of our, you know, intel work. We spoke with, people that followed him, you know, coaches and other people in the business. I mean, Cronin's got 35 years of coaching experience, so he's got a network of contacts everywhere. And, he was very blunt with him. He said, you know, here's the knock on you. Your defensive game just is not good enough. And Galchenyuk, to his credit, bought in, right? And So ever since then, he's been in the AHL for the most part, and they're working really closely on all of his really taking his defensive game down to the foundation and then rebuilding it back up. And the part that was interesting for me is, I mean, here's a guy who played in the NHL for 650-something games, and he himself admitted that he didn't even know what he didn't know about defensive work. And, you know, for the longest time, he was able to just get by producing, and teams would kind of overlook any shortcomings away from the puck and defensively. And but obviously, as that production has fallen off, now you have to bring something else. Again, to his credit, he realizes that, he recognized that he had to do that. He's really bought into the entire overhaul of his game. I mean, that's difficult to do, I think, for any player. He's been playing one way pretty much his entire life, and 10 years in the NHL one way, and now he's trying to reinvent himself as, you know, good two-way defensive forward. And you know, it's I was thinking of this, it's almost similar to what you'll see junior players do, right? They put up huge numbers, they turn pro, but it's obvious that their future, if there's going to be one in pro, is going to be as a defensive forward. And so they have to really kind of completely learn to play a different style, right, from what they did. And this is that situation, but with 10 years in the NHL behind it. So it's that much more of a dramatic shift for a player. And he's 28 years old, so he's certainly on the older side to be turning around his career. So, yeah, it was a very interesting chat we had.
Well, it's funny, too, because from Colorado's perspective, you have Nate Maxfield coming in next season.
Mm-hmm.
Cale Makar's, if it hasn't already come in yet, it will be next year, whatever. He's making another $9 million. They did sign Lattice Cog before last season. It's a lot of money to your core. So, and also granted, they trade a lot of their draft capital for deadline additions. So they've got a hit on those, you know, league minimum deals.
Mm-hmm.
They signed Ben Myers out of Minnesota. They've been good there. But in terms of offensive punch and potential, and, you know, of course he's got to be better defensively, but I think you naturally one would think that the real advantage here is if you can get his defensive game to a decent enough point, you could have him on your second power play unit. You could have a sort of a mismatch there. And it's funny because I almost think that the biggest mistake Galchenyuk made was leaving Toronto, because they really, like, the development staff there saw Galchenyuk as a guy that has played on, you know, five teams within like 3 years at that point. And they had him with the Marlies. They had a development plan with him. He's with the Leafs. He actually became a pretty serviceable producer for the Maple Leafs. Then, you know, kind of a grass is greener approach, I would think. He goes to Arizona where, oh, there's more ice time opportunity, whatever. Scores 20 points in 60 games. Again, nothing crazy good. And then from there, he kind of tapers off. So I think, if anything, there's the angle of, oh, he'll go down to the AHL and dominate and then come back up. No, it's what you're saying, Pat. It's he's got to reinvent his game. You see it a lot in the NHL now, even. Like, look at a guy like Eric Staal in Florida.
Yeah.
He's because of just the nature of his A, age, B, you know, the decline that comes with that, he's had to reinvent his game. And Galchenyuk, you know, I think a lot of people would have wanted it to come sooner. And I say that in reference to when he was in Montreal, there was all that talk about, is he number one center or all that stuff. But anyways, all that aside, I think it's a really good gamble by Colorado. And for Galchenyuk, it's a great place for him to try to reinvent himself. Colorado's, both their teams are nearby each other. Are the Eagles in Denver too, or are they Loveland? Like,
they're about an hour north, Loveland. Okay. It's
but nothing
right up the highway. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I think it's a pretty serviceable idea for both sides. Let's move on to our prospect of the week. And he is a prospect that was just part of the NHL blockbuster with Bo Horvat, and that is Atu Ratu of, I almost said the Islanders, but no, of the Vancouver Canucks organization, soon to be Abbotsford Canuck. One of those players where the name is kind of a life of its own. He was projected when he was, you know, 16 or 15, whatever it was, but from a young age to be the next kind of prodigy. And as it happens sometimes, it didn't kind of work out that way in terms of him playing pro a teenage year. Anyways, he slipped on draft day in 2021. Islanders drafted him the second round, 52nd overall. He's been with Bridgeport the last 2 years. This is his first year at Bridgeport mainly. My bad. Played a couple games in Long Island with the NHL team this year, scoring his first two career NHL goals. But so far this season, Ati Ratu has 15 points in 27 games with the Bridgeport Islanders of the AHL. He's headed over to Abbotsford, and Patrick Alvin said when assessing the trade, in his mind, they got three first-rounders back. Now, I'm not about to get into that because that logic kind of makes my mind go in a pretzel, as I don't know if you can really consider a second-round pick from before a first, no matter how much his value goes up or down, which is kind of sloppy logic. But, Pat, you spoke to some of his former teammates and coaches today or yesterday, I can't remember, but what's kind of the read on him and the player that he could be? What's Vancouver getting in him?
Yeah, so I spoke with William Dufour, who's a fellow, really strong prospect. Dufour was a fifth rounder, put up huge numbers last year in the queue with St. John, but is having a good year himself as a rookie at Bridgeport. And Bridgeport themselves, they've been very up and down this year. But, so you have Dufour. He's played with him. He's also played against him. He played this past summer at the World Junior Championship when Ratu was there and Dufour, obviously, was Canada. And the first thing that obviously every player will tell you is just the skill is evident right off the bat, right? the shot comes to mind right away. The hockey instinct, that's very obvious. Dufour just also mentioned just you play with him, right? And so you're facing him and he's just such a dangerous player. In so many different ways. He can beat you in different ways. And I talked to Brent Thompson, his head coach, and Brent Thompson's always been a real honest, direct quote. Brent Thompson will certainly speak to the on-ice component that anybody can see if you watch Ratu even for 5 minutes. But coachability right off the bat, and Thompson's a pretty old school coach, so I put a lot of stock into that in the sense that, he demands a lot out of his players. So the fact that Thompson is willing to say that he's very coachable, very, very smart. He thinks the game extremely well. Just a smart guy all around. And his work ethic. Thompson, he's a real stickler for that. So for Thompson to cite those different ingredients above and beyond what you see on the ice, I thought was very impressive. And this is a player that actually, obviously when I spoke with him, he's no longer within the Islander system. Both of them could have kind of punted the question, or they could certainly have, said a few very generic, nice words and moved on. But they were both very effusive in their assessment of Ratu. So as Thompson said, we got Horvat, but, in order to get something valuable, you have to give up something valuable. And I thought that was spot on with how things applied to Ratu. So I think the Canucks are getting a good one. They're going to send him down to Abbotsford. They actually just did that this week. So he'll get a chance there to play with Klimovich, Pekulzin, some good young forwards there. And it looks like, I think they're going to try to avoid the mistakes of the past that the Canucks have made with other players, rushing them. I think they're going to take their time with Ratu and not try to put him in too much too soon. You did obviously have some time earlier with New York Islanders this year, but there's still certainly a lot to do in terms of rounding out his game. But I think if you're the Vancouver Canucks, you have to be pretty happy with what you got in terms of Ratu.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt it. I don't know if this is a guy that screams star. And I think that's probably the contention from Canucks fans' perspective or whatever it may be. But yeah, from everything I've heard and the brief little bit I've seen, it seems like he's probably a middle six guy in terms of his ceiling and kind of his trajectory. I mean, is this a matter of Vancouver banking on him reaching the potential that many thought he used to have? I don't know. mind you, they passed on him too, right, in his draft. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, I don't think that they're asking for something crazy. But yeah, no, I'd agree with you. I think that it's definitely one of those sort of high upside picks where you're banking on him being more than a serviceable player, a impact player, not a game changer, but someone that can slot in the near future to some degree.
Yes, certainly somebody that can, you know, be a second or a third line role, kind of depending. I mean, obviously, there's tons of moving pieces in Vancouver right now, but if that's where it ultimately settles out, I think, you know, in addition to obviously what else they got in the deal, I think if that happens, Vancouver would certainly be very happy with that outcome. And, he'll get to work with Jeremy Colleton, the head coach in Abbotsford, so that will be good. And we'll just have to give this one some time and see. But, I saw there, you know, there was definitely some consternation there coming out of Vancouver, you know, the fan base and such. But I would just say pump the brakes on all that. You know, he's still very young. His first year in North America, you know, full season, and there's still tons of runway there. There's certainly still a lot to be written on his, what he ultimately becomes. But I think for right now, he's trending well. And, we're not there yet in terms of what he will be, but it's encouraging at this point.
Let's shift over to our team of the week, and that's the St. Louis Blues. A lot of interesting players that are with Springfield or have been with St. Louis recently, but back down because of the All-Star break that's happening up there. But what's interesting, too, about St. Louis is the way it's looking now, there's going to be some changes there soon. I think that they'll be dealing some of those big guys. And what you see after the deadline with teams like this is some of these guys we're about to mention could be coming up in sort of a show me type of call up or out of pure necessity. They may not have enough guys to ice a roster, so they may have to bring them up sooner than they would have anticipated. We'd be remiss not to start with this guy, and that's Joel Hofer. Stud. Got the contract extension mid-year. I'd be shocked if he wasn't in one of the two goalies St. Louis has next year. And just he seems to be getting better and better. And it's scary because I wouldn't say he's a late bloomer. I'm not saying that. But goaltenders in general take the longest to develop. Mm-hmm. He's only 22, but he's getting better and better each year. And it's just like, it's crazy to think what he could even accomplish next year and beyond. Like, this is him at 22 putting up these types of numbers. He's a 917 save percentage in 28 games this year. He had a really strong playoff with them last year as well. Like, it just seems like he keeps going up, up, and up.
Keyword, I think, is the playoff. That was such a huge jump for him. You saw quite a bit of him last season as really a first-year full-time AHL player. And, you know, like any young goalie, there were ups and downs, right? There were nights where you definitely saw the potential, and there were other nights where you're like, all right, he's a rookie goalie, and, you know, this league can it can make life very difficult for a young goalie trying to find their way. But last year, the Thunderbirds, they went to the Calder Cup final, and Hofer had that net for a good portion of that playoff run through, you know, three rounds coming out of the East. And then, in that final round as well, Charlie Lindgren, who's obviously now with the Washington Capitals, was on recall, to the Blues during their own Stanley Cup run. So, that net turned over to Hofer, and, he really took that opportunity, I thought, and ran with it. And he also got to, you know, when Lindgren was in Springfield, he got to work with a really good veteran, a player that had been through his own ups and downs as a young goalie prospect. So I think having that mentorship early on in his career, his first year as a full-time pro, was a huge, huge bonus for Hofer. And now this year it's his net, and Springfield's really had some good goaltending, even amidst a real up and down season with a lot of injuries and a ton of call-ups. So I think Hofer, that contract extension really spoke to the potential that the Blues see there.
Jake Neighbors, another person that's interesting, 2020 first round pick of the Blues. This year he's been sort of half and half. He was just with St. Louis for about 27 games, started the year out with Springfield where he had 14 points in 19 games, back down during the All-Star break. Definitely one of their quicker emerging players. Like, it's pretty crazy. Last year he was still in junior.
Yeah.
The fact that he's playing NHL games now is pretty crazy. He's only 20 years old. I would suspect that whether he goes back up after the deadline or not, I think that they're probably hoping for a long run in the playoffs, if that's how it turns out. And that's probably their hope there. But what's the 4-on-1 on Jake Neighbors?
Kind of, he's kind of a big horse, you know, type wing, right? Like just
like
you
the
know,
animal.
He can log minutes. He can grind for you. I think there is some scoring touch there. Maybe when all is said and done, and he's maybe fully developed, works hard, you know. So just kind of a real sort of prototypical up and down, traditional type winger, and. I think the Blues have themselves a good one. And I'm pretty impressed, all things considered, with Neighbors. I mean, you know, like a lot of those young players that really, I think, had to deal with the disruption caused by the pandemic season. I think he's handled it well. And I think if you're the Blues, again, a lot like Hofer, you have to be happy with where his development's at. He's gotten some time up and down this year. I'd love to see him maybe stick in Springfield down the stretch and get to be the guy or one of the guys for a stretch drive. Springfield's definitely going to be in that situation where they're in a tight playoff race already. So they're going to every game down the stretch here is probably going to be a tight one. So I think that would be a real good experience for him if possible.
Neighbors kind of fits the mold of what the Blues have long had in on their wings. Barbashev, mm-hmm. Buchnevich, they went out to get just Josh Levo, even.
Yeah.
And when I say grit, I think the word grit is kind of misconstrued as enforcer, like sort of like just a guy that throws haymakers. But when I say grit, I just mean that compete and that one-on-one battles on the wall. Like Neighbors really embodies what the Blues have usually kind of had there.
Patrice Bergeron's gritty, you know, the way he plays. So
yeah
I think gritty gets a bad rap sometimes, but it just means a guy that will outwork the opponent for the puck and will take
exactly
the play and all those elements you need to win.
Right. I think the way the word gets bad is when coaches use it to substitute or to excuse negative play. So that's probably how. But yeah, I think Neighbors makes a lot of sense for this core going forward. It'll be interesting to see like if they keep him down there or send him back up. It's probably something that's interesting to monitor. And another thing that's interesting to monitor is Will Bitton. Now, this guy is probably the fastest rising prospect in that organization because, you know, he started in the Minnesota organization, wasn't working out, was thrown into a trade, ended up in St. Louis. Last year was Springfield. He popped off like shot of a cannon, almost like out of nowhere. I don't even think anyone saw it. So, for example, last year with Springfield, he had 25 points in 45 games regular season. Playoffs roll around, 21 points in 18 games. This series got 28 points in 35 games in the AHL. He's actually even had 4 games with the Blues as well. Third round pick of Montreal back in 2016. So he's kind of on a second wave here, third organization he's part of. What's made him able to climb that ladder and kind of knock on the door to become at least a player that plays some games for them?
Yeah, so he was in the Minnesota system and that time, I think, could just run its course. You know, he definitely kind of plateaued there. You know, like a lot of players, you know, he kind of gets that second, in his case, I guess you might say third, depending on how you assess the Montreal thing. But another shot, you know, so he goes there midseason to Springfield, has a solid finish to a season, and then just built for the playoffs. I mean, a real rambunctious energy player. He drove opponents nuts all throughout the entire postseason run that Springfield went on. And then he also really kind of displayed a nice little scoring touch as well that maybe had not always been part of his game at this level. I think more importantly, he carried that over to this season, right? Like, so he wasn't just playing off the adrenaline of a playoff run and everything that comes with that. You know, he started producing going through the kind of the early grind into the mid-season grind of the American Hockey League. You know, so short off season comes in, really brings that same style that worked for him last spring and is able to keep it going. That consistency level that coaches you know, constantly talk about. He's been able to show that. And yeah, like you said, he got some time up with the Blues. Depending, I guess, what St. Louis does here down the stretch, I won't be surprised to see him get some more time. I think every team needs some guys like that. So, you know, those energy guys, the guys that can kind of mix things up a little bit and go out and maybe do something. On, you know, if the team's flat that night early on and you throw him on the ice, he'll do something. He'll create something. He'll create a turnover, a hit, a scoring chance. I think that's where he really fits and shines really well.
Matt Kessel is another person, another late round pick that has also climbed the ladder. Is he on the cusp of getting games, or does he need the remainder of this year to maybe show what he can do to the AHL before we start talking that way?
Yeah. I think he's close, or at least he's getting there. I mean, the interesting thing for him, right? So like he came out of UMass, right? And obviously, so you're looking at essentially half of a pro schedule in a given season. And then that pandemic season was even shorter for him. He only had 29 games that year. So it was interesting. So last year he plays 37 games with UMass. They wrap up their season. He immediately turns pro, goes to Springfield. Between the end of the regular season and the playoffs, because of that run, he ended up playing 33 games in the AHL. So only four off the entire output of games that he had, you know, gone through the entire, you know, season at UMass. So he ended up kind of making up a lot of that time in a short period. And now this year has come in and really carried that in. A real big, solid, sturdy type defenseman. Certainly shows some playmaking ability at the college level. I'm not entirely sure that's completely been reached yet at this level in the AHL, but I mean, I think that's to be expected, right? I mean, you don't expect, especially a player that, you know, stepped in, you know, for the playoffs last year, you know, when the level of play just goes up that much higher. You know, I think he's shown a little bit more of that this year. That confidence has been building. So I think, you know, he's a fifth round pick, right? So the Blues, I think, got themselves a nice bargain there. And I think he'll certainly finish this season in Springfield. But I think next year is when he'll really start to challenge for some call ups with the Blues. And so where it goes from there. But I think he's been a pretty encouraging prospect so far, considering. Again, something of an abbreviated repertoire of games as a young player, you know, before he turned pro. And then now getting into the flow of things, getting a playoff run a month into his pro career, I thought that was huge for him. And I'm interested to see where he can take this.
Last one, Nikita Alexandrov.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he was sent down to Springfield about a week ago. At some point, but he'd been with the Blues for a while. Like, is he, I don't want to say graduated, but like, is he still like fighting to prove something, or where's his game at? Cause I saw him play with the Blues a bunch this year.
Yeah. I think he's like right on that line. I think
the bubble. You know,
Yeah. I think with our teams, he'd already would have crossed that line into the NHL, second round pick. So obviously there's a lot of potential there coming in, and he certainly thought he, maybe had a little bit of a slow adjustment period last year, but this year he's really taken off. And you know, certainly he's shown some scoring pop with the Springfield Thunderbirds. But I think he's just about there. And again, I think if depending on what St. Louis does coming down the stretch here, I won't be surprised to see him. If they do start to maybe move some players around or move some players out, that he steps in and takes a role there and sticks there for good.
Absolutely. Well, that's all we've got for today's show, folks. I hope you liked the second part of Carrick. I think he's definitely someone we're going to try to have on again this year. He's just it's funny. We spoke to him for about like 40 minutes and I felt like I could have gone on for hours with the guy. Like, it's almost like, yeah. But we were just scratching the surface really. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe he'll replace me on this. I bet we'd all like that. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be sure to get you next week. We have a really cool guest coming up. I think you all really like it. A little something different than what we usually have. But until then, take care, guys.